Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here once again for KTAH 101.9's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate and always respectfully. Respectfully because that's what decent human beings do, and also there's a practical reason. How can we hope to have a dialogue with people who have different perspectives than we do if we can't listen to them respectfully? Hard to imagine they're going to listen to us respectfully if we can't do that for them. So, always respectfully. Well, I'm just back from a beautiful 5-mile walk out in Point Defiance. Clear skies, bluest sky as you ever saw, so to speak. Olympic Mountains with a fresh dusting of snow. Fresh, clean air. A mountain I could see way up in the north, I think, was Baker. Not sure about that, but that kind of clarity today. A day that just is a joyful time to be in this beautiful part of the world that we live in. I like to close out this program by saying, live like the mountain is out. Well, the mountain was out today, for sure. And I could feel the energy of the other folks that were walking, the smiles, the bright steps. It was a great day to be alive. Yet part of what was going on there for me is our human limitations and being able to perceive our environment. We have a hard time seeing things that are invisible to the eye, and we have a hard time seeing things that change slowly. So part of what was invisible to me today and every day was the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Since 1960, the concentration of carbon dioxide has gone from 310 parts per million to 410 to 415 parts per million right now. That's something like a 50% increase in the concentration over that relatively short period of time. And we're living in a world with concentrations of carbon dioxide probably double the average of the last 800,000 years, and certainly never been anywhere near this high in the last 800,000 years. We know these numbers from direct measurements down in Hawaii at the Scripps Institute sensor system down there. And prior to that, we know it from ice core samples, mostly from Antarctica, going back 800,000 years. So speaking of the Olympic Mountains, got to be one of the most beautiful mountain ranges in the world, a place for glaciers. But from 1982 to 2009, we lost something like 80 glaciers, gone extinct, never to be seen again, and that process certainly hasn't stopped. Glaciers are disappearing regularly, and loss of ice is a major symptom of what's going on here in the Northwest with climate change, a symptom that's got real-world impacts in terms of water supply during the summer, fish habitats, hydroelectric production, etc. And just the quick version, all of that carbon dioxide adds up to a warming Earth, and a warming Earth adds up to the results, some of which we can see up in the Olympic Mountains. So I'm not going to lie, I love this day, but it's a little bit like being on a sunny train ride somewhere where we're sitting up in the Vista Dome enjoying the passing scenery, or sitting in the dining room car having a cup of coffee and enjoying a conversation with friends. All the time in the background is the knowledge that somewhere up ahead there is a bridge out and nobody's paying a bit of attention to it. So that brings us to that ever-present question, and that is, what are we going to do? The inevitable answer is politics, that ugly, noisy, wild, wild west of struggling ideas and power, struggling to change the course of human events. But first, I'd like to address the notion that if we just let things be, the market will take care of things, the world of individual choice and entrepreneurial innovation. So I'll start by saying an emphatic yes to innovation and choice. Price drops in solar and wind, hundreds of times cheaper now than in the 70s, and prices continue to drop. Renewables beating out coal in the marketplace, a place where the emissions aren't priced into the cost of fuels, by the way. And renewables would be far ahead if those costs were priced in, the cost of toxics and climate change costs. And there's innovation going on in energy sources like small-scale nuclear. Efforts, by the way, that are being stymied to a significant extent by countries squabbling over technology. But that's just the way that is, I guess. So wouldn't it be nice if we just let things go and the entrepreneurs and individual choice would solve this problem of too much carbon dioxide for us. The reality is the marketplace, with all of its blessings, is far too slow to take on the task that we're facing right now. We're dealing with the accumulation of a couple hundred years of carbon dioxide, an ever-increasing accumulation, and an increasing acceleration rate in that accumulation, and the marketplace alone is just not enough to get us to where we have to be to avert catastrophe. So this takes us to the world of politics, which is the focus here today. There are things in the course of human activity that basically require the government to say, this is what you're going to do. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. I think most of us agree that we need a police force to provide for our community security. So let's take, for instance, the Washington State Patrol. I think we agree that we need to have a Washington State Police Department. Okay, if we were to just leave it up to individual choice, we could say, okay, we need a police department. All you folks chip in whatever you can, and we'll have a police department. Probably not going to work. And the reason is real simple. Every individual in that community is motivated to spend less than their neighbors. They're better off financially if they can get other people to pick up the tab and them not pay it. And so we're not going to have enough funds to pay for a police department. The answer becomes, if you want to live in this state, you're going to pay taxes, and these are what the taxes are. And part of what we're going to do with the taxes is provide a police force, and we're going to use the political system to decide how much the taxes should be and to decide where those taxes should go. The same thing is absolutely true about carbon emissions or the climate in general. We as individuals and corporations and other large companies are motivated financially to pass on the costs of their business, the costs that come in the form of pollution and greenhouse gases. They have a motivation to pass those costs on to other folks, and they're not going to take on those costs by themselves. The reality is, in the marketplace, they can't afford to, because if they take on those costs and other businesses don't take on those costs, then they're going to go out of business, and the businesses that are skipping their social responsibility because it's cheaper to do that are the ones that are going to stay in business. It's just real simple that for industry and for individuals too, as far as that goes, it's cheaper to deal with effluent just by dumping it some other place and letting somebody else to deal with it, or hoping that nobody notices or just goes away. It's not going to just go away. It's still going to be there. But that financial motivation to dump is irresistible, especially in the corporate world. So probably the best answer to that problem is that government provides rules that regulate how businesses operate. If there is going to be an effluent from the business has to manage that effluent. They can't just dump it out on the populace in general. That's called regulation. Now, business and industry understands this very clearly, and they have managed to make regulation a dirty word. The way it's always talked about is, well, business does better if we have less regulation, onerous government regulations, et cetera, is the way it's posed. And I have to say, yes, true, in the short run, and for those particular businesses that are able to dump their effluent into the environment, they do make more money, and so it is good for business in that regard. They're passing on their cost to somebody else. Yeah, that system works. It's just not fair, right, and long-term untenable. Just to state the obvious once again, the only way to manage that, the only way that we can keep industry from dumping their effluent into the environment, is through concerted political activity, which leads to regulation that prohibits those kinds of behaviors. And we accomplish that, at least in part, by electing public officials who understand that issue, understand that perspective, and that are willing to enact laws that regulate those kinds of behavior. Now, that's kind of a Pollyanna-ish high school civics vision of how things work, and we know things don't really work like that. It's just not that simple. The problem is, in the United States here, we have concluded via the judicial system that spending money is the same thing as speaking. And as a result, corporations and related kinds of organizations have pretty much of a free rein to spend money getting officials elected who are going to be favorable to their cause, favorable in the respect that they're going to let them get away with doing antisocial things like dumping their effluent into the environment. So how much are organizations willing to spend on this kind of thing? The short answer is huge amounts. In 2020, it's estimated that between the president, the House, and the Senate, nearly $14 billion was spent by interested groups. And most of these groups had very specialized interests. They weren't interested in more generalized things that affected all of us as a whole. They were looking out for their own interests. So just a quick example of how that works. Methane leaks out of pipes and wells and so on during the production of natural gas, and that's a dangerous greenhouse gas, a very potent greenhouse gas. There's efforts at the federal level to regulate that, to measure how much is being lost and to try and minimize how much is leaking out into the environment. And industry has been recently successful in squashing some of those regulations with the claim that, well, we'll just manage it by ourselves. It's not that big a deal anyway. And the evidence is that the leakage is probably twice what's routinely acknowledged by industry and the federal government. Yet they can continue to do that because they get the ear of the federal government. And they get that ear because of the financial contributions they make. Now, of course, the politicians and the industries both claim, oh, we're just helping out with the democratic process here. There's no quid pro quo. And I believe there's no specific quid pro quo in most cases because that is against the law. But it's naive to believe that an industry that contributes hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to political candidates doesn't expect that they're going to get the ear of that candidate when it comes time to vote on legislation that affects them. And, oh, by the way, there's one thing that goes on significantly, and that is that those industry lobbyists often write their own regulations because Congress doesn't have the resources or the willingness to do it. So politically, we need to be working towards defanging industry lobbying groups. As a whole, they don't want to mandate clean energy. Working towards overturning Citizens United, a Supreme Court decision that led to the financial political mess we're in right now, is a good goal, as well as public financing of campaigns. The campaigners do need to put their message out there. That's a given. What's a good way to do that? Having industry pay the bill? I don't think so. So let's move towards public financing of campaigns. So while we're going over our political wish list, the next thing we could consider is that we want to stop subsidizing the fossil fuel industry. Why are we taking our money and subsidizing an industry that's creating such damage here at home and around the world? Just in the United States alone, the fossil fuel industry gets about $20 billion a year in special treatment in form of tax breaks, accounting gimmicks, below-market royalties, plus not paying to have the cost of the damage done to the environment. And that's not included in that $20 billion figure that I'm giving you there. So none of these tasks is a small one. It does mean we need to be politically involved at every level, from local up to national. And we need to do our homework. We need to really dig in and find out what's going on. We need to look at candidates, regardless of party, to understand their stance toward climate, industry, energy, and money in politics. Sadly, climate has become a partisan issue. And I do have to say that it's partisan, more partisan at the federal level and the political level than it is amongst what I would call ordinary folks. There's a very good chunk of conservatives who are concerned about the climate and want to do something about it. So it's just not a simple, polarized partisan issue. There was a time when both parties were concerned about climate, and unfortunately that's changed. Something that's changed one way can be changed back the other way. So if you're a conservative listening to this, I urge you to talk to fellow conservatives to come up with good conservative answers to how we can manage the problem of climate change, a problem that's real and not subject to elimination via conspiracy theories or science denial. And if you're listening to this, you know that's true. I will talk to the coming Georgia election for the Senate, two Senate races going on down in Georgia and runoffs, and they're critical to what our national stance is going to be in terms of addressing climate change going forward. do your homework once again, find out what's going on down there, and make your voice be heard in that election. You can do that in a couple different ways. One, of course, is money, contributing to candidates down there that you think will do a good job with climate. The other is with your own effort. There are online organizations like Common Cause or Vote Forward. Just Google and find some organization that you can take part by phone banking or texting or writing letters to have some impact on how that election plays out down there. The harsh reality in all this is that we have to have elected representatives who understand the nature of the climate problem and who are willing to stand up to industry. And that standing up has to rely on mandates and regulations, mandates like clean fuel standards and prices on carbon, incentives for transitioning to clean energy, electrified transportation, clean energy building codes with all of my goal of keeping the fossil fuels in the ground. Well, of course, that's just the national scene, which leaves international politics maybe even more dicey than our own domestic politics. If it looks like we might clean up our act here domestically, the United States, we can start calling on others to clean up theirs through diplomacy, trade laws, and so on. We're a huge part of the world economy, and that brings leverage with it, and we can bring that leverage to bear in getting other countries to clean up their own carbon emissions. One really effective way to do that would be with a carbon price, both here at home and on imports, with a rebate on our exports for our own industry so they're not disadvantaged in the international market. If foreign companies are paying a carbon tax to sell goods into the U.S., their countries will be motivated to put a price on their own carbon. That way they can keep that money at home rather than paying it to the United States. There's a bill in Congress, H.R. 763, it'll have a new name next year, and there are other similar bills that put a price on carbon along with a dividend or other means of spending the money that's gathered from those carbon fees and taxes. So, how much time do we have? Short version, we don't have any time. Time has already run out. We're already feeling the effects of climate change in the form of wildfires, destructive weather, disappearing ice, acidifying oceans, heat-caused health effects. Now it's just a question of how bad are things going to be? We are out of time. So get active, get political. Okay, well, that's it for today. I'd love to hear from you. John, J-O-H-N, at cctacoma.org. And any email that you send me, I'll read, and I will certainly address your concerns over the air if that's appropriate. So, once again, I'm reminding you, live like the mountain is out. Take care now.